Let's get started. So, right, so we left off last week and things were looking very happy and looking very hopeful for the first time in a long time. David and Avner are reuniting. Avner's major sin in Perek Beis, where he really followed in his cousin Shaul's footsteps, because Avner knows full well what Hashem wants. He knows that Hashem wants David to be king. He heard Shaul say that himself. He admitted that last week when he fought with Ishbosheth. So once he realizes that Ishbosheth is not going to work out as king, so he no longer has the Yetzer Hara to ignore what he knows is the right thing to do. So that makes it easy to do the right thing. So he goes to David. He wants to make an alliance. He wants to unite the kingdoms. David will be the king. Avner is going to be the second in command. He'll be the general. Maybe we'll get some nice job for Ishbosheth, for Ishbosheth. And the original dream that David and Yehonasan had of uniting the houses of David and of Shaul, and David's going to be king, which really was always the ultimate plan. I mean, Shevet Yehuda should be running the show, but Binyamin, which is the little brother, but is supposed to be close with Yehuda, will also be involved, and everyone's going to get along. Everything should be, will be as it should. The civil war is going to fade into the past, and it's an opportunity for a bright new dawn. And we left off, leaving the last word we saw was Shalom. Avner leaves David and Shalom. He's off to go finish bringing the people and reuniting them with David. He's already done the hard work. He's already done the legwork, dealing with the leadership of the other Shvatim. And then once he had them in the bag, he went to Binyamin, and he got the leadership of Binyamin on board. So once, he just has to go and finish the job, right? It's like he did the Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and now it's just time for Hoshana Rabbah. You know, we just got to officially send it in the mail. Just nail it down. We're almost there. And now this week, it's all going to come crashing down. So let's share the screen, and here we go. Right. So, and you know, the basic problem, which we already saw in Perek Beis, which began with David being such an idealist and trying to get on the same team as the people from Yavesh Gilad. And then the problem is, once you're king, so you got to deal with generals. Right. The king has plenty of work to do. So it's no longer David himself who leads his men the way that he did in Shmuel Aleph. He has Yoav, Ishbosheth, who's a very nice guy, has Avner, and the two of them, like, single-handedly, you know, threw everything into civil war. So now Yoav's gonna come back. And what's really interesting about the beginning of Perek Gimel, or the end of Perek Gimel, hopefully today we'll do the end of Perek Gimel and we'll cover Perek Dalet because it's short and also conceptually related, is this is really gonna show into a strong light the complicated relationship between David and Yoav, and how they're everything is always gray with the two of them. Usually when one looks better, one looks worse, and the other way around, but it's never black and white. It's always like when David is in a darker shade of gray, Yoav is in a lighter shade, and when Yoav is in a lighter shade, David is in a darker shade. So the parak over here, this is going to be the real first time we see a sharp contrast between David and Yoav. It's going to be a case where Yoav looks worse, David looks better. But at the same time, we'll see how some of the Mefarshim and Chazal go out of their way to show that there's what to be said, lekaf zechus of Yoav, and also there's what to be said, lekaf chova of David. This is really, really, really complex. We're dealing with great men, and great men are complex. So Pasuk Chaf Beis, so we're told as soon as Avner leaves town, you know, it's like Yaakov and Esav coming in before Yitzchak. So Avner goes out. And at the same time, so they just came back from raiding. It used to be David at the end of Perek Shmuel Aleph who was leading the raids. But now David has been crowned as king. So he stays at home in Hebron. And Yoav is the one who leads the army out on the raids. Ushalal Rav Imam Heviyu. I think Mefarshim assume that Yoav has just gone to fight the Plishtim. Apparently was tremendously successful. They come back with immense amounts of spoils. Right, he had sent Avner away. We see he sent him away in peace, emphasizing again the idea that they left in peace. And then Pasachav Kiel, we all have a chosh of tzavash. We tell Baal, we give you a little bit more. Avner ben Ner al Melech, we shall chay v'yelach b'shalom. So again, this word shalom is emphasized, like in case we can't miss it, right? It's beating us over the head. So Yoav's whole army has been told what happened, told that Avner came in peace. Yoav is horrified. Yoav says, and one thing we see from the get-go is Yoav does not exactly have, you know, fear of David. Yoav, in his own unique way, very unique way, is extremely loyal to David. But the idea of Mora Malchus is not something that Yoav has. Let's also remember Yoav is David's nephew. So Yoav comes to the king and he says, I think this is the first time we see Yoav ever talk to David. It is, yes. The first time we ever see David and Yoav talk. So it's interesting. It's Yoav who does the talking first. And what does Yoav say? Vayomer, me'asisa, what have you done? Right? First time we ever see Yoav talk to David, he's yelling at him and he's saying, what did you do? Hinei ba'avner lecha lama zeh shelachto v'yelech haloch. You, Avner came to you. Why on earth did you send him away? Yadatas Avner ben Ner. You know Avner, the son of Ner, right? We know the family. Avner is from Shaul's family, the family of Ner. He's come to deceive you. Yadatas Motacha. He's come for the intel, right? Yoav is thinking, you know, basically, what would I do if I was in Avner's shoes? He's thinking of himself as a general. He's thinking of himself as an intelligence commander. This is a Mossad mission. Come on, David. Don't be so naive. Stop with your Tehillim and realize what exactly is going on over here. Now, David, what's David's response? We just looked at Pasuk Chavav. David does not respond at all. Right. At least the Navi, maybe David does respond. Could be that David defends himself. But the Navi clearly gives us the image of David as somebody who is totally silent. He doesn't push back. Now, we should appreciate Yoav's position, right? Before Yoav comes into the king, and it's kind of, you know, amazing that Yoav could just come into the king and talk this way, like just come in and start blasting him. But we have to realize, and this is the problem David deals with really for his whole life, the rest of his kingship, what he deals with Yoav, is that Yoav is indispensable. Yoav is really good at his job, and not only can David not afford to get rid of him, he may not have the political opportunity even to get rid of him. First of all, he's just come from a tremendous victory. He's come with immense wealth. We can assume the army is on his side. Mitzudas David points out even more. The Navi said, "V'kol hatzava," the entire army came. Mitzudas David says, this was such an incredible victory. Lo nifkad mehem ish. Yoav didn't take a single casualty. So he is at the peak of his popularity. You can imagine how much Yoav's men love him. The truth is, the last time we saw this, the Navi said explicitly, the last time we had a Jewish attack and no casualties were taken, that was exactly David's last attack on Amalek. And David attacked Amalek at the end of Shmuel Aleph. And of course, he was the one leading the men. Presumably, Yoav was the second in command. David was at the head, right? The Navi told us that it was such a successful attack. They came back from fighting Amalek with tons of spoils, which David sends everywhere, and they did not take on any casualties. So now that David is king, things have changed. And who was the one leading him out into battle and winning and spoils and the soldiers love him? It's no longer David, it's Yoav. And this is a problem which David will never have a solution for. How can his kingdom needs an extremely successful general? Yoav is that extremely successful general. David can no longer play that role fully like he used to. But by definition, that means that Yoav is going to have an extremely powerful political base. He's going to be somebody who David can't live without. And Yoav knows that. And consistently, that means he's going to follow his own policy. And that is set up for us from the get-go. When we're first introduced here to Yoav and David, that's what we see. David, Yoav is an amazing general, and he knows what that does for it. And David is never going to have a solution for it. What's like shocking is how effective that is. David is going to come off almost like Ish-Bosheth in this story, right? Last parak we saw Ish-Bosheth, who was the total nothing. I mean, the Navi was even dropping his name. He was such a piece of milquetoast that Avner is taking him around and Avner's running the show and Avner's the one calling all the shots. And in theory, Ish-Bosheth is the king, but he can't do anything without Avner. Well, all of a sudden we turn from Machanayim to Hebron. We see what's going on with David HaMelech. And the Navi says, actually, it's not so different with David. It's not so that Yoav and Avner are two very, very similar people. And even though David is a far more charismatic and effective leader than Ish-Bosheth, in some ways, endemic to being the king with a general like this is having to deal with that same reality. So Yoav, having left David, and at least no implication from the Navi that David strongly defended Avner. We don't see anything. Yoav says, what on earth are you doing? And David doesn't respond. David could have responded. David could have said, Yoav, you think I'm naive? This is going to be the greatest political coup in Jewish history. I mean, without killing anybody, I'm going to get a unified kingdom. Avner is doing the dirty work. Avner is the one who's traveling up and down the country, talking to all the aristocrats and all the elites and getting everybody lined up to abandon Ishbosheth and to choose me as king. This is not political, innocence over here. He's playing a serious game. But David doesn't say any of that. David does not respond to Yoav, at least we're not told. And so Yoav immediately goes after Avner. The Navi makes sure we know that David lo yada. David does not know anything about what's going to happen. And this is going to be where Yoav is going to kill Avner. Right. Now, remember the previous parak, Avner killed Yoav and Avishai's brother, the brother Asael, who was dead set in going after Avner. And we saw how complicated that was. You know, was that innocent of Avner or not? On the one hand, the Navi went out of its way to emphasize again, Avner kept on warning Asael, stop it, don't chase after me, chase after someone else. Why should I have to kill you? I'm going to have to face your brother afterwards. Stop this. He gave Asael many, many warnings. But on the other hand, the way that he killed him was kind of suspicious. Remember, we saw that picture of the end of the spear, and the Radak says, yeah, when he kills him with the hand, with the shaft of his spear, it's not like it was a sad accident. It was a very advanced military move where he took the sharpened end of the spear, which is what you normally plant in the ground, and he just went behind him and caught him off guard and got Asael right under the fifth rib, right in the heart, which is going to kill him instantly. And the Gemara, which describes Yoav's eventual Din Torah, when Shlomo brings him up for judgment for killing Avner. So Yoav won the Din Torah for Avner. Yoav argued that I killed Avner as a Rodef, and he had a sufficiently compelling argument that even Shlomo was not able to win. And so that's what the Gemara did. So we have that happening over here. Right? And now the real question for Yoav is twofold. Number one, when Yoav kills Avner, and he brings him over to talk to him quietly, right, and he does it in secret, it's deceptive. So he stabs him exactly in the same spot where Avner killed Asael. So it's a real perfect revenge killing that Yoav does, but. You right away have to ask, why does Yoav do this? Does Yoav do this because he's motivated by wanting to be the Goel Hadam, by wanting to avenge the blood of his brother? Or is he going after Avner because he's nervous personally that Avner, who's also, you know, the other master general in the country, is going to take his job, right? Barbanel, I think, and others raised this possibility. But the Navi seems to emphasize that Yoav did this for, at least from his perspective, were honorable reasons. Because the Navi does say twice, right, that Yoav is killing Avner for having killed their brother Asael. Now, we could also say that this is not the proper course of action. And in fact, the Radak has a very sharp point. The Navi says that the Pasuk Lamed, Yoav and Avishai, apparently Avishai was there to help out, Hargu Avner al Asher Himisis Asael Achayhem, so he killed Asael, their brother. Okay, if that's all the Pasuk had said, that would have been one thing. But then the Pasuk ends, but Milchama, Avner killed Asael in warfare. Writes the Radak, this is a sharp criticism. Whoops, one second. Kilomar, who harag Asael b'melchama? He killed him in war. That's what happens in war. One person's going to kill another. Behem argu Avner b'shalom, and they killed Avner when it was in a state of peace, which the Navi had emphasized many points earlier. That's exactly what David has in mind when David is going to criticize them very harshly. So, right, it's very great. On the one hand, there is a blood debt. Yoav and Abishai feel loyal to the legacy of their brother, and he kills Avner the exact same way Avner killed Asahel, and that was under suspicious circumstances. On the other hand, that wasn't a moment of war, right? Can we really say that Avner Avner had no right to kill Asahel? I mean, they were fighting war. You know, there's a classic line from the Minchas Chinuch, who asks a question, right? You know, how many mitzvahs do you have to give up your life for? So there's only three, right? The big three: murder, idolatry, and forbidden relations. So says the Minchas Chinuch, well, hold on a second. You know, we tell people to go to war, right? We're gonna go Amalek, right? We're gonna come up to Parshas Bishalach in a few weeks. We know there's a mitzvah to fight Amalek. Well, what's going on? So the Minchas Chinuch says, look, you can't ask those kind of questions because warfare, by definition, involves risking life, right? Warfare is a totally different scenario. So can we say even that Avner, you know, was a murderer if there was a war? It's war. War is war. People die. People kill. It doesn't, you can't take that and treat it as a personal circumstance. But Yoav does, right? So there are defenses to be made, but at the end of the day, it seems like it was something which was unacceptable. David is horrified about it, and we'll see. David is going to mourn, but David in Pasuk Chavtes places a curse on Yoav. Yechilo Rosh Yoav al Kol Beis Aviv al Yikaresu Beis Yoav Zav Umitzor Umachzik Bapelach Benofu Bachar Bechasar Lachem. Five people is going to have. They're going to have. They're always going to have in Yoav's legacy someone who's a zav, someone who has tzara'as, someone who's a cripple, someone people who are killed in war, and people who starve. I forgot who. Someone pointed out that all these have in common is that these are people who are fundamentally weak, right? They're united in lacking power, being overpowered. They're revenge for Yoav for being so self-independent and assertive. But the Gemara has, Radak quotes it, the Gemara has a fascinating reversal of this line. You read the Psukim and it seems like David was innocent. David wanted peace. David wanted peace at the beginning of Perek Beis when he first sent the letter to Yavesh Gilad. It was Yoav and Avner who started the civil war. It was then David and Avner who ended the civil war. And now Yoav who goes and breaks it back open again. It seems like David has been wonderful the entire time. And Yoav has been the problem. And yet the Gemara says about this in Sanhedrin, Chasim Beis, Amri Yehudam Arav, Kol Klalos Shekilel David as Yoav, Niskaimu Bizarro Shel David. All the curses, all those five curses that David placed on Yoav, we actually find in the seed of David. The Gemara goes through, Radak quotes it over here, some of the different kings and David's descendants we have on the record of Sefer Melachim having all five of those curses. Gemara finds evidence that Rechavam, David's grandson, is a Zav. Asa, who's Rechavam's grandson, is lame. Uzziahu, another king, is going to have tzaras. Yehoyachin is going to starve in prison. Yoshiyahu is going to be slain in battle. All five of the curses we do find among David's descendants. So what the Gemara, what Rav is clearly saying in the Gemara over here, is that David claimed, what was David's claim? David said in Pasuk Chavches, he said, "Naki anochi, I am innocent before Hashem. Ad Olam, forever. I'm forever innocent, and the curse is going to go on Yoav." Well, apparently, the way that Rav and the Gemara understands Hashem's reaction is, you are not Naki Ad Olam. Whether you think that Yoav is more guilty than David or less guilty is one thing, but to say that David is totally innocent here, the Gemara says, that is not the case. There is guilt for David as well. David should have stood up to Yoav. It would have been difficult. It would have been hard and complicated. We certainly can understand why he didn't do so. And yet, right, and it's really telling what we expect of a David HaMelech, that despite facing such a powerful and victorious and popular general in Yoav, Rav says, no. Whatever the excuses are, the excuses, at the end of the day, David should have stood up against them. And for not doing so, his descendants are going to pay and pay severely. And ultimately, right, the guilt is placed on David in many ways over here. So this is really, really interesting how we have, you know, the defenses for Yoav, the guilt of Yoav, David, you know, seemingly very innocent, but also there's a shadow there, and the Gemara does not hide from that shadow for David. It actually places a real focus on it. And the bottom line is, you have just a terrible tragedy here. We have three of the greatest leaders we've had, two of the greatest generals, and the greatest king. And we had a moment, the possibility of peace, and the desire for revenge just got in the way, right? And it's the quintessential issue in Sefer Shmuel of what the person he himself wants versus ultimately what is the will of Ribbono Shel Olam. And there's the moment of shalom potential, and Yoav doesn't want it because Yoav is just focused, and he can rationalize, and we can imagine so easily how he can rationalize that he's not doing this for himself. This I know is going to cause me headaches, but I need to stand up for the blood. It's a mitzvah to be the goel hadam. I need to protect my brothers. Right? That's the rationalization that Yoav is going to make for himself. We know the rationalization that David is going to make. He's going to say it in a few psukim. There's nothing he could have done with Yoav. But, you know, people of the caliber we're dealing with, and say for Shmuel, it's clear that Hashem expects more of Yoav, and he expects more of David. Okay, so David, and we see David's political skill. Right? It's funny that Yoav comes in, he imagines David as like a neophyte. So David knows exactly what he's doing. David realizes that there's a political crisis here as well, because people are going to suspect that David was in on the killing, because that seems like the obvious way to understand what's going on. So David says to Yoav, and he says to everyone who was with him, so right, tear your clothes and put on sackcloth, and we're going to have a public eulogy for Avner. And David himself walked in the funeral procession, which doesn't seem like such a big deal, but we'll see that it's actually pretty shocking, because this is not normal behavior. The Navi continues and describes, they're buried Avner, they buried him in Hebron. Interesting, they didn't send him back to Binyamin. David mourns publicly. So he openly weeps, publicly weeps at the kever. He has a kinna. It's much, much shorter than the kinna for Shaul and Yonasan. It's pasuk and a half long. Similar to the kinna for Yonasan and Shaul. Remember, that was a chiastic kinna. Remember, right? It was that diagram we had where we showed it ended the same way, and then every pasuk going, right? A was parallel to the last one, and second to the second last one, and so on and so forth. So here, David does the same thing, but it's much easier because it's just four lines. How could David die like a naval? And then the middle two pieces, your hands were not bound, your feet were not in chains. And then he goes back to the original point that you fell like before Bnei Avla, right? The death was tragic, and Avner had not been, he had not been captured, he'd never been defeated in battle, he had never been convicted of any crime. And nonetheless, even though he was a victorious and innocent general, is the image that David creates, nonetheless, he was murdered. Clearly, it was an effective hesped. Just the way the halacha says the hesped is supposed to be, where it says the hesped is supposed to make people cry. It's not just supposed to sum up the person's legacy. Halakhly, a hesped is supposed to move people to tears. And Nabi says that's exactly what David's hesped did. It caused everyone else to cry even more. Right. David goes on. David is clear with his public mourning. He swears he's not going to eat any food. He's going to fast the rest of the day in his mourning for Avner. And the Navi says that this did what David wanted. They saw what David did, right? And they thought that it was good. So all the people, right, recognized that David was not involved in the killing. And then David says, you know, I can't do anything about Yoav. Here's where the rationalization comes in. Here's where Chazal, you know, jump in with their criticism of David. I'm new king. And these men, the sons of Tzruya, these are hard men. I'm a soft king. These generals are hard men. So now we need to ask, what exactly was David doing? And we can look at this very optimistically and very cynically. We can look at this and say, this is amazing. David was so moved by the death of Avner. Avner, who caused him trouble when he was Shaul's general. He caused him trouble when he was Ishbosheth's general. He chased David up and down, trying to kill him as a fugitive. He continued the civil war when it was time to unite everybody. And nonetheless, David, who recognizes everything that Avner did for Kal Yisrael and mourns him and feels terrible, and there's nothing he can do at all about Yoav and Avishai because they're so powerful, and what can he do? All the way to look at this is to be extremely cynical and see, you know, this is great for David. David now has an open pathway to uniting the kingdom. He'd be crazy to get rid of Yoav and Avishai because he really wants these people around. You know, he's got two loyal, effective generals, you know, so he's not going to get rid of them. And I'll have some excuse. What can I do? I'm new. They're tough. Come on. If David wanted, he could have gotten rid of them. And he puts on a public display of mourning to just, you know, get the people on his side, but without actually feeling the guilt. So, you know, and he has some excuse. Oh, I can't do anything to Yoav and Avishai. Hashem will take care of him in the right time. But Yishalem Hashem lo se'ara akirasa. Hashem will do it when he'll pay them back. It's not my problem. You know, the Dayan MS, we'll leave it up to him. Meanwhile, I'll enjoy all the benefits I get from having Yoav and Avishai in my army. So what's really interesting is it's like 2 points. The Mishnah puts some of this out in the open. Right? Again, Chazal did not shy away from any of this. The Mishnah Sanhedrin, we looked at earlier, we saw the Mishnah Sanhedrin earlier in the parak when it discussed the halacha of never marrying the widow of a king. And the Mishnah there discussed what Avner did with Shaul's Pilegesh. So the Mishnah here says, Meis lo meis, if a king has a relative who dies, eino yotzei pesach paltrim shelo. So it is for the dignity of the king that he should not leave the palace. It's not kavod hamelech for the king to walk through the streets in the funeral procession crying behind the person who has died. He needs to be dignified. He needs to stay in the palace. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im rotzei la'aseis achar mita yotzei. He just says, what are you talking about? For sure he can go in the procession. Shekin matzino b'David, sheyatza achar mita, so shel Avner. Because that's exactly what David did with Avner. Shneur, b'melech David, holeich achar mita. Says to tata to the chacham, how on earth can you say that this is a problem? What do the chacham say back to Rabbi Yehuda? Lo haya hadavar el lafayis esaham. David did that to appease the people. So if we break this down, we can see a couple of things. Number one, it is clear that Rabbi Yehuda looks at David's mourning as completely genuine. Right? That much is clear. What is not clear is there are two basic ways to understand the response of the Rabbanan to Rabbi Yehuda when they say he did this to settle the am. One possibility is to read this fully cynically, that David did not really feel any avelus at all, and the whole process was just the fayes es ha'am. He needed to get them to understand that he had nothing to do with this, and that was everything that's happening here. However, the other way to understand what the Rabbanan are saying to Rabbi Yehuda is, look, Rabbi Yehuda, you are correct that David's emotions of mourning were genuine. However, if that was all that was going on here, that would not have been enough. The avelos enough would not have been sufficient to allow David to abandon the kavod hamalchus, which is required. He should have stayed at home. What allowed him to go out into the streets was that there was going to be a clear political consequence to him doing this, right? It was the shalom that was going to be achieved through going out and joining the funeral procession that allowed David to do that. but that by no means takes away from the fact that the mourning was completely genuine, right? Those are two equally viable ways to understand what the Chachamim are saying to Rabbi Yehuda. They're arguing with him in how to understand the story, what David was thinking, or they're arguing with him in the halacha. The story is the story. And come on, Rabbi Yehuda can agree. It is obvious that there is political benefit to David to make clear that that he was not involved in Avner's killing. But Rabbi Yehuda thinks halachically it was the avelus which allowed him to go out. And the Chachamim think, no, that halachically it was the lefayes es ha'am that allowed him to go out. Right, it's so interesting that you can really look at this at different ways, and the Navi really intentionally leaves it in a gray manner. But there's one piece I think that's really important for us to pick up on, and this is to praise of David, because someone who is cynical could easily read the pasuk Lamed Tes and say, "Come on, right? Really, David? Really, you're gonna tell me Yishalim Hashem lo seira akira so?" I'm not going to get involved, and I'll just leave it to Hashem to do the dirty work in terms of taking care of Yoav and Abishai. So we should appreciate that the answer to that, if it was just a regular person, probably we should read that cynically. But the fact that of all people this is coming from David is different, because David has money in the bank on this particular issue. And not only with anybody, but even in regards to specifically Yoav and Abishai, the sons of Tzruiah, because let's remember what happened in Parak Chavav of Shmuel Aleph, when David and Avishai, right, one of the sons of Tzruiah, who right now he's saying these are the guys that I have to leave up to Hashem. Well, David was with Avishai when they saw Shaul asleep out in the open, right? And Avishai says, kill him. And David said to Avishai, are you crazy? I'm not going to do that. Yemar David Chai Hashem, Kiyim Hashem Yigafenu. David, when he's a fugitive, right, when the chips were down, he said, I'm going to leave it up to God. I'm not going to do this. I'm going to leave it up to Hashem. I have trust. I have faith that Hashem will ultimately do the right thing, and I'm not going to get involved. So it is that money in the bank which allows us to take him at his word. He means it when he says this in Shmuel Bey's Paragimlon. He says, I don't feel comfortable. I don't feel like I have the strength to do this, but I am fully confident that ultimately Hashem will make sure that justice is done. So we could debate whether or not that faith, that weakness he felt in himself was appropriate, and Rav and the Gemara clearly felt it wasn't, but we should not doubt the genuineness of the bitachon that he expressed. Because if he has said that to Avishai when the chips were down, we should believe that when he says it about Avishai when the chips were up. Okay, so the time remaining, let's see if we can just finish off Parak Dalid so we can get to Parak next week. So now we shift scene, right? The hope of peaceful reconciliation has been destroyed. And not only that, but the real hope of Ishbosheth has been destroyed as well. Navi says, Yishma ben Shaul. Once again, right? He's not Ishbosheth. He's the son of Shaul, which is A, we're dropping his name. B, whenever you call somebody the son of, that's always a derogatory term. When Shaul called David ben Yishai, that's derogatory. When Dasan and Aviram call Moshe ben Amram, that's derogatory. When the son of Shaul saw that Avner had died, Vayirpu Yadav, right? He's weak. He's got nothing. Bechol Yisrael Nivhalu. Everyone in his kingdom, was totally in turmoil. Now, Abarbanel understands this turmoil like the way we have it in the Megillah, right? To mean confusion. Abarbanel says that the confusion was, right, those who are local in Hebron knew full well, those who saw David mourn knew that David was not involved in the killing of Abner. Barbanel understands that up in the north, in Ishbosheth's neighborhood, they're not sure. Some people, right, that's the raging debate. Was David involved or was he not? In other words, there are real consequences to Yoav having killed Abner. That's what Barbanel understands is happening here. It's not just that people are panicked because they know that the game is over in the north. It's that they're confused. Everyone's trying to figure out, did David order this or did not? I think it was the Radak who says some of Ishbosheth's leading allies are panicking. Right? Well, if David secretly had Abner assassinated, maybe we're next. You know, we were hoping that we could get on back on David's good side. We, the way that Avner convinced us to join David was because Avner said, look, you know, the game is over. Let's throw in our cause with David. Well, if David has killed Avner, maybe we're next. Maybe we have no hope. So there's a lot of turmoil and confusion and fear in a case where there was supposed to be a real amazing moment of shalom. Now, two people who clearly are going to think that Avner was, that David was involved in the killing of Avner, are these two people that the Navi introduces us to now, Rechav and Bana, right? Who are, you know, spoiler alert, they're going to associate Ish, but they're going to assassinate Ish-Boshes in a few psukim, right? And yet another assassination. But if we look at these psukim, so the psukim are a little bit strange. I want to flag a very interesting point that the Malbim makes about the psukim over here. So after telling us that Shaul is that Ish-Boshes, right? Ben Shaul is panicking, and all of Israel is confused and scared and shaken up. So then, Navi has three psukim, which are very, very difficult. Ushnei Hashem Sereg Dudim Hayu Ben Shaul. So the son of Shaul again, right? They drop his name. So you had two captains, right? Now it's like we're conditioned to be nervous about this because we just saw Yoav with his gedud, and that wasn't good, that band. So now we have two more men who are military leaders. This is not going to end well. Shema achad bana v'shema sheni recha. So they're bnei rimon habeirosi. So it sounds like they're brothers. Right? The Navi, you see how the Navi is like really putting them next to Yoav and Avishai, and this is not to the credit of Yoav and Avishai. So we had the brother generals with David who assassinated Avner. Now we have two other brothers who are generals. They're the sons of this guy, Rimon Habeiroti, Mibnei Binyamin. These are members of Shevet Binyamin. So it makes sense that they are leaders in Ish-Boshes' army. But then the Navi says just something cryptic. Ki gam Be'eros techashev al Binyamin, because Be'eros is also a part of Binyamin. They ran towards Gat or Gitayim. Okay, fine. The people from Be'eros lived there until this very day. So why are we talking to these people? Are they from Binyamin? Are they not? They lived in this place called Be'eros. They ran away from there to another place. Why do I need this information? And then the Navi throws in something else. Yehonasan ben Shaul bin, Yehonasan, who talks about him? He had a son, Nechei Raglayim, who was lame. Ben Chameh Shanahai Bavoshim Shaul Yehonasan mi Yisrael. He was 5 years old when the news, right, that Shaul and David were killed, that Shaul and Yehonasan were killed in Yisrael in the north came. But Seir Manto Batanos, and so his nursemaid picked him up and fled. So he fell while in the turmoil, while they were running, he fell and his legs were broken. They never were set, so he's lame. Ushmo Mephibosheth. His name was Mephibosheth. So why on earth are we having these interjections to talk about the people from the Be'erosim are running away from Be'eros and Mephibosheth, who was running away over there? What is going on? So the Malbim just basically says that all three of these going together. And literally what this does is this is giving us an image of the collapse, the final collapse of Shaul's monarchy. And we just have Pasuk, like once we're bringing up the disaster of Avner, we're just going to throw in any other disaster that has been happening in the world of Shaul. So Rashi, for example, says, when did the people from Be'eros run away? Oh, they ran away after Shaul and Yehonasan lost the battle. And Yehonasan also, Mephibosheth also ran away there. And we're just bringing up all the disasters are coming together. However, there is one problem with that perspective. This to say that, like Rashi, that the people from Be'eros fled when Shaul and Yehonasan lost the battle, which is, let's go to the map. The map, how did I not put the map in here? I forgot the map. But Be'eros is near Givon. When in Sefer Yoshua, when Yoshua makes that treaty, right, that deceptive treaty with the Bnei Givon, so they go to their cities And one of their cities is Be'eros. So it makes sense for this to be in the land of Binyamin, because Givon is in the land of Binyamin. Shaul's family lived around Givon for a very long time. Right, this is like due north of Yerushalayim. But that means that it's smack in the middle of the country. So it's a little bit surprising, because it didn't seem like the Plishtim penetrated all the way into the center of the country. So Rashi is going to say, yeah, apparently, at least maybe for a little bit, they did. Now, Rabbeinu Yeshaya points out that there's a support for this, because if why would Mephibosheth have to run away unless the Plishtim really, really penetrated? But unclear. That's subject to question. Okay, so that's one main way of understanding this whole thing. These Be'eros, they ran away from the defeat of Shaul. Mephibosheth ran away from the defeat of Shaul. And the Navi literally wants us to emphasize, let's remember Shaul's defeats when seeing the impending collapse of Mephibosheth. But there is one other possibility. I think that Mikra points this out. And it actually is going to fit with the end of the parak. Which I think we probably will leave until next week. But the Mikra suggests that there is another reason why the Be'erotim ran away. They didn't run away from the Plishtim. He suggests they ran away from Shaul. Why would people from Shevet Binyamin run away from Shaul? Well, he points out that we're going to be told at the end of Shmuel Beis that Shaul had a big fight with the people from Givon, right? So now he's going to tell us. Givonim lo b'nei Yehuda hema, ki meyesar ha'amori. People from Givon are not Jewish. And that's a whole issue. It goes down to the Gemara to figure out the status of the Givonim, because they've made a treaty with B'nai Yisrael, and they lived together with B'nai Yisrael. It seems like there are intermarriages and close relationships that are happening. And so the Navi has to emphasize that they're not from Israel. They're from the Canaanim. U'B'nai Yisrael nishbu lahem. We made that treaty with them. Vayvakesh Sha'ul ha'kosam b'kanoso livnei Yisrael v'yuda. And Shaul tried to wipe them out in his zeal for B'nai Yisrael and Yehuda. What is going on with that passage? So I guess we'll discuss it in depth when we finally get to Parakafal for Yitzhak Hashem. But the pshat of the passage, why are we bringing up the oath and bringing up Shaul's zealotry? The pshat in the passage is that for many, many years, this was a problem that stuck in the craw of at least some of the more principled members of Am Yisrael. We had this treaty with Givon, and we had to make it because they tricked us. And their subsequent behavior makes clear that not only did they trick us in the moment, they're really rotten people from beginning to end. You know, the Gemara is going to describe that David HaMelech is ultimately going to make a gzeira that nobody can ever intermarry with Givon, because of their lasting cruelty. But they're living right there with us in the middle of Shevet Binyamin. Now, how do we react to that? Well, there are going to be some people who are going to say, okay, they're around. This is, you know, there's a business opportunity. Let's make the most of it and let's get along and let's become friends. Let's become family. You know, exactly the proposal that Shechem and Hamor make to Yaakov and the Shvatim in Parshas Vayishlach. Right? But then there's another group which for years and years and years is going to look at this as an original sin and say, we never should have obeyed this Shvua. They had to in the moment, but one way of understanding what happens with Shaul is that Shaul in his zealotry, because Shaul, let's remember, the Navi, when it describes his life, it focuses on his faults, but he was an extremely effective and powerful king. And he was extremely earnest, right? He was an absolutely earnest person. He is not putting up with this. He wants to wipe out Givon, right? That's the pshat in the passage. Bnei Yisrael swore they would leave him alone, those leftover Canaanim. Shaul wants to wipe them out, and they have to run away. They have to run away. So the Dat Mikra suggests that these Be'erotim were other people from Shevet Binyamin, right? The people from Binyamin who had become close with Givon, right? And in the course of Shaul saying, look, the original sin we had in Sefer Shoftim was we did not get rid of the Canaanim. Let's make good on that and get rid of these people. Let's be principled and do what we should have done the first time, you know, even though they had made an oath not to do so. That ends up chasing away some of the people who had allied and intermarried with that family, and that is these Be'erotim. So then if that's true, we have this contrast between Shaul with his zeal for Am Yisrael and this other family, these Rechav and Bana people who are real individualists, right? Their family was just looking out for personal benefit connecting to Givon, and they're going to be looking out for personal benefit as well. So we'll stop here. I'm sorry we're ending at the end of the parak. I also want to just mention it's the learning that we did today. Lila Nishmas, the Yartzeit of my grandfather, of Pinchas Teitz, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, and definitely a huge inspiration for me. And next week, we'll pick up with the end of Parak Dalet and go on to Parak A. So thank you very much, everybody, and looking forward to next week.
Thank you.